What is the best gift you ever received? Something outlandish you requested for Christmas that you never expected you'd get, but you did? Or was it the more common toy that you absolutely loved and still wonder what became of it? It could be that precious gift of time a friend gave you that made all the difference. Perhaps it was a thoughtful gift from your husband or wife that only they could know how much it would mean to you. Or maybe it came from a child or a grandchild, a gift that made you grin from ear to ear. Whether it was an object precious to you, the time someone took for you, the kind word someone spoke when you least expected it, most of us have received that gift that we cherish either tangibly or at least in memory. But perhaps you belong to the few who can't think of anything anybody ever gave you that meant anything to you. That's a tragedy. Gifts, tangible or otherwise, connect us, show us we're worthy, loved, and appreciated. Today, we will explore some of God's gifts to us, and one gift in particular that tells us exactly how much we mean to God. A gift given to every human that has ever walked on the face of the earth. A gift that God demonstrates that God loves us, cares for us, and always has the very best in mind to give us that he can offer. What we discover today is deeply rooted in relationship and should be meaningful for the jaded church member of many years, the young person who sees religion as useless, and even you, whose love for Jesus is enduring and strong. Let's begin with a sweeping view over thousands of years from antiquity to our enlightened world. Since the fall of Adam and Eve, it's always been the same. Humans treat humans with indifference, and worse, as a resource. Something to be exploited and used. We've lost ourselves in the frenzy of a world where your worth is measured by your productivity. In America, one of the first questions we ask of someone we meet is, "What do you do? What's your job?" And we size them up by the prestige of the job and the money they might earn. Being busy has become a status symbol. Do you feel lazy if you can't report how many hours you've invested into a project? Do you feel like your time is overextended, and if you add just one more thing, you're going to crack? Currently, there's a lot of talk about robots taking over much of our work to free up some time for us. Wouldn't it be fun to have a little robot run around and do a lot of the work for you? I love my RoboVac and mop. Move some things out of the way, make sure there is clean water in the tank, the dirty water tank is empty, then push a button, and away it goes. It's so fun. I could watch it for a very long time do its job. if I just had the time. Because time behaves pretty much like space. If you empty it of one thing, you quickly fill it with another. The ancient gods had the same dilemma. There are numerous creation legends that predate the biblical report by up to 1,000 years. We will just look at two of these legends, the Enuma Elish and the Atrahasis epic. Both originate from Mesopotamia, part of our modern Near East. These are legends that actually the patriarchs would have been rather familiar with. They portray gods vastly different from the god we are privileged to know. The gods of these legends weren't kind, generous beings looking out for the best of others. They were angry, self-serving, and their task of keeping the world afloat had them exhausted and tired. These gods fought wars with each other and could be killed. In the Enuma Elish, through twists and turns, we find a god executed after a cosmic war, the world created from her blood, and then humans created from her slain captain for the express purpose of serving those vengeful gods. In the Atrahasis epic, we find gods who are overburdened and exhausted from maintaining the world. Digging canals is hard work. They're simply burned out. So they come up with the bright idea to create humans to do the work for them. Humans exist to do the gods' chores so the gods can rest. Now, imagine how believing this would make a human feel. Used, enslaved, embittered, exhausted. In this kind of world, it is your task to appease the gods, who by your gifts may be inclined to make your lot a little easier, and if you work hard enough, you might be granted a little of life's sweetness. Watching the gods, you probably act towards others the way you perceive the gods having acted towards you. You seek to make things easier for yourself. And what better way to do so than to make your fellow man a slave to you? The conditions for the cruelty of the ancient world are set. Humans are no better than the gods they serve. Into this world, a story is written that so far has only existed orally and provides the exact counterpart to the story of numerous gods presiding over a chaotic world. Moses writes the story, protesting the prevailing narrative by sharing a completely different god. Instead of vengefully and lazily creating humans to do his dirty work, this God gives. He creates light, land, seas, vegetation, sun, moon, and stars. He fills the seas with creatures and invents a myriad of amazing animals to roam the land. And in a final act, he fashions mankind, whom he plans to gift with everything he has created before. Before man ever exists, God makes lavish gifts to bestow on him. Every gift he makes, he inspects meticulously before he pronounces it good. Towards the end of the sixth day, God stoops in the clay to form a human in his own likeness. And to the wondering eyes of the human, he presents his magnificent gifts. What a God. But although his creation is finished, God still has another gift to bestow on the first couple. In direct opposition to the gods humankind has invented, Yahweh does not exploit. He says, I have made you for freedom so we can enjoy each other. God's ultimate gift is a day of rest, rejoicing, celebrating, a day God has deeply embedded into the life rhythm of the humans he has created. Let's be sure to understand. God, who has just spoken the earth into existence, isn't tired. Isaiah tells us in chapter 40, verse 28, do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. The first couple to walk the earth is not tired either. They've only just awakened to life with the fresh breath of Yahweh filling their lungs. The gods of the Enuma Elish and the Atrahasis epic would look at these humans so full of life and energy and say, oh good, they're fit for work. Yahweh invites them to celebrate his perfect creation. He calls them into his presence, and joyfully they worship their maker. The next day, humans begin their work. Aha, you say. So humans were created to work for their God, after all. For sure, humans were given the task to take care of their world. But not in drudgery, doing the work the gods should be doing, but in joyful creativity, making the world God created for them their own. It's a pleasant, fulfilling task, and God himself delights in the ideas humans come up with that take his creation in new directions and expand it. At the end of creation, God speaks to the humans and invites them into his presence. I am gifting you this day, he says, every seventh day to spend with me. You don't have to work every single day. I give you freedom to enjoy what you've accomplished, and I will enjoy it with you. Rest from your labors and let's celebrate. This day, the seventh day, is God's final gift of creation week, set in motion way back then and coming new every week, over 6,000 years down to our time. Unchanged, predictable, beautiful. But in our fallen world, people forget. The Israelites forgot just like we do. They and we hoard our time as we hoard our money. We work ourselves to a frenzy and end up exhausted. God misses his time with his children. So he spoke his 10 words to the Israelites at Sinai, and he speaks to us as well. God calls into our busy lives, "Remember me? Remember that day I gifted you? I long for you. Come apart for one day and spend it with me. You are weary and heavy laden, but I will give you rest." And when God spoke his 10 words, he did something amazing that the gods of the legends would never have even thought of doing. He made this day for everyone, young or old, male or female, slave or free. This day is for all, regardless of your station in life. Sadly, humans behave as though we were still living under the gods of the Enuma Elish and the Atrahasis epic. We live the rat race, and oh, how hard it is to stop and remember that we were made for more, for freedom, not drudgery, for celebration, not subjection, for worship, not contempt. We spurn God's gift and aim to subvert it. As Israel of old, we willingly step back into slavery. As Adventists, we look at people of other faiths and pity them because they don't understand Sabbath. We shake our heads at Sunday worship, wondering how people can't understand the simple truth presented in the Bible. To be sure, Sunday is a day of human invention, religious systems giving a day of their own, appeasing, as it were, their God, rather than accepting Yahweh's magnanimous gift. But what about us, Seventh-day Adventists? Are we so much better? Or have even we managed to make God's gift into our gift to him? Like the Pharisees, we've sometimes made a glorious day into one our children have dreaded, and we did not enjoy ourselves. We quote Isaiah 58:13, "If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, and forget to read on." We debate endlessly what constitutes breaking the Sabbath. For generations, we have read "not doing your own pleasure" and heard "don't have fun on Sabbath." Don't enjoy yourself. Don't do things that bring you happiness. And so we built an entire Sabbath culture around restriction. No swimming, no games, no entertainment, no pleasure. But what God wants is that we stop our labors and commercial pursuits. He asks us for one day to stop the rat race, slow down, and enjoy his presence. Perhaps the better question than to ask, what can't we do on Sabbath, might be, how can we enter into God's presence and His pleasure? What is it that gives God pleasure? I think our best answer to that comes from Jesus, the Lord of the Sabbath, who said, "The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath." The theme of the Sabbath as a gift is carried over from the Old Testament into the New Testament. It is to be of benefit, not a burden. Jesus showed that it was right to care for people and animals on this day, setting us an example to do the same. He reminds us that it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. He also stripped the Sabbath of all the legalistic and ritual requirements by allowing his disciples to pick grain on the Sabbath and telling the healed paralytic to pick up his bed and walk. That was radical in a world that didn't allow you to light a fire on the Sabbath day. Jesus offered rest to the weary, showed compassion to those in need, and demonstrated what true worship is. If we follow his lead, leave our business and worries behind, then we truly enter into the gift of the Sabbath. Did you notice that when I quoted Isaiah 58:13, the thought was incomplete? Now that we have seen that this verse does not speak to making the Sabbath about rules and regulations, but rather about leaving behind the commercial, everyday cares of this world, let's read it again, this time coupled with the promise of verse 14. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride in triumph on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken." God has something in place for us that takes the place of our relentless pursuit of the cares of this world. He gives us joy in the Lord. Once we experience that, we realize there is no greater joy than that. He causes you to ride in triumph on the height of the land. In the poetic language of this phrase, we notice that we can leave off the struggle for a better life because God Himself will lift us into a place of visible blessing, stability, and victory. We don't just survive, but we are established, secure, and honored. No, God does not guarantee us wealth, ease, or constant success. He does promise His presence that will elevate us above the cares of this world, deep stability in the face of our oh-so-unstable world, and His favor when the world around us withholds it. Finally, we are promised to feast on the inheritance of our father Jacob. Does that seem obscure? I'm sure it's not to Troy. He can go much deeper than what we have time for here. Briefly put, it means living in such alignment with God that his promises become reality to you, something you actually experience, enjoy, and are nourished by here and in eternity. So where do we go from here? I would ask you to spend this week reimagining your next Sabbath. What does it mean for you to have this gift, unburdened by rules, filled with freedom and beauty? What would make Sabbath something you look forward to more than you ever have before? What would make it something you actually anticipate all week? And how can you contribute to the anticipation of Sabbath for others in your sphere? Come out of the rat race and receive the Sabbath. Not as a rule, not as a religious obligation, but as a gift from a God who has been giving since the beginning and has never stopped. Put the phone down, step off the treadmill, let business wait, and remember who you are. Not what you produce, not what you earn, not what the world says you're worth, but who God says you are, made in his image, called good, invited into rest and celebration.